The Asian Classics Institute presents Lojong, Developing the Good Heart, with Geshe Michael Roach, recorded live in New York City in June of 1998. This is the beginning of Class 1.
It's so hot, and I don't think we were supposed to be down here, but it sounds like there's a nice choir up there, so looks like that. After tonight, we'll be up in the main church up there, and it'll be a lot more comfortable, so try to bear with it, okay? It's a lot bigger up there and more comfortable, all right? This class subject is... Yes? Say Lojong.
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 Lo
means head, and Jong means water, and it's a sweating practice. Not really. Okay. Maybe Lo means mind. Lo means mind. And Jong is an interesting word. It can mean to make pure, like the same root is used for Buddha in Tibetan. Jang Chug, Jang means purified, meaning a Buddha, a pure being. Jang can also mean to practice something, like Lutse Jang means to practice sports, like to practice football or something like that is called Jang. And so the word Jong can mean, I mean, when a Tibetan hears Jong, they think of pure, making something pure, and then they think of practicing something. Okay, so you've seen it translated as mental training, okay? Some kind of mental training. And when I heard it translated that way, I was thinking, it sounds like something that would raise your IQ. You know, mental training sounds like maybe interesting, you know, maybe I could finally figure things out, you know, like that, mental training. It sounded like some kind of intellectual exercises or something like that. And it has another meaning, it has a different meaning. And it's some kind of very radical behavior modification therapy, all right? Very, very radical behavior modification, all right? And, you know, those of you who were in the last class, the survivors, I was kind of disappointed because a whole bunch of people stayed, the whole class. It was like 70 people. I think we started with 135. And it was a very hard class. I mean, it was logic. We counted up the pages of readings. It was 350 pages of readings. It was a really, really hard class. And that was Buddhist logic, how to make syllogisms, how to prove things. It was very, very complicated and very difficult. This class is totally, totally different. Okay, I mean, you're going from one extreme to the other. All right, Lojong, a typical Lojong text is one page long. All right, so like in Tibet, you have Lamrim Chimo, Buddhist teachings, 1,000 pages long. You have the monks' vow books in the Kangyur, 16,000 pages of how to be a good monk, you know. And Perfection of Wisdom, 900 pages for the tiny one, okay. The other one is 12 times larger, okay. And then you've got Lojong. The Lojong you're getting tonight is one page long in Tibetan, okay. And we're going to study it for two sessions. We're going to spend 4 hours on one page of Lojong. Lojong is totally different than logic or philosophy or something like that. Lojong is something that is meant to change your behavior forever. And it's meant to be used at work, okay. It's not something for... You can use it for a meditation session, and they have meditation sessions built on Lojong. But Lojong is something that's meant to be applied at work, with your family, with your husband or wife, with your kids, something like that. Okay, Lojong is meant to be applied in your life all day long. It's not almost a Buddhist thing, I think, you know. And it's a major change in how you relate to other people, and very much more difficult than logic, okay? Much more difficult than philosophy. And I'm not just being, you know, like the Dalai Lama, he's so heart, you know, from his heart he speaks and he's so inspiring. I'm not being, you know, like big friendly religious talk, you know? It's really true that it's much harder to study a Lojong than Buddhist logic or advanced philosophy. It's much more difficult, okay? So we're going to go through a Lojong to get the feeling for Lojong and the point of Lojong and what Lojong is supposed to do for you. I tell people I was on a plane. I was 18 years old. I was going from Phoenix to Washington, D.C. I had never been out of, I'd never been on a plane like that. And I was all by myself and I was going for a trip and I was all scared and... we took off and we were flying and flying and flying, and then we got to Chicago, and they said we reached Chicago. So I'm like planning, how do I get to the airport and what do I do? And then they started to circle in the air around Chicago, and they circled and they circled, and then they started to the plane started to dive and then come up again, you know. So it would dive like really sharp, and then they would stop and they would shoot up again, and it was very foggy. And we were all shaken up, you know, we don't know what they're doing, you know, and the plane's like going like this, and they keep going like this. And then the stewardess comes down down the aisle, and she's shaking, you know, like this. And she's, and then she finally, she goes in the back, and she breaks into tears and like whimpering. And we're all like, it was really, really, you know, I can't tell you what it felt like. I can't describe what it felt like. It was really weird. She was just breaking down in the corner. And then, they flew around in circles for a while more. And then finally they came on the thing and they said, we can't get the landing gear down. And so we're trying to jar it loose, you know. And so, you know, we are going into these dives and stuff. And we can't get it down. It's not coming down. And then they said, we can't do anything. And they can't see us on the ground. Because of the fog. So we've gone by the control tower a few times. They can't see us. So we have no way to know if the landing gear came down or not. We don't even know. None of the equipment is working. And so they said, we're going to circle until we run out of fuel, just short of running out of fuel, so that when we crash, you all won't burn to death, you know? And it was very weird, you know? And it had been a normal flight, and people complaining about the food, and people talking about the movie, and people gossiping, and all sorts of human interaction, you know, people getting irritated, other people fighting for the armrest, you know. And it had been a normal flight, and the stewardess was this pretty happy person, and now she's sobbing in the corner. And it was really weird. And then the other stewardess who wasn't crying came around, and we had to take off all jewelry because it would burn through your hand. You know, like everyone had to take their jewelry off and keep it away from their body because it would melt and it would go through your fingers. And then everyone had to take their shoes off. Anyone without normal running shoes had to take their shoes off so you could run faster. And it was really weird. And then they said, like, 2 minutes before we go down, you're all going to have to get into this posture and let's practice it, you know. And so everybody was, you know, we went down behind the seats and you're supposed to put your head down. And that was the worst because you can't see anybody else. And all you can do is think, you know, and think about what's going to happen, you know. And it was really weird to think that, you know, when we hit, that you're going to be in that position all by yourself and thinking about it. And it was really weird. And we had like 15, 20, we had more, I think it was like an hour, and we circled. And something very different happened. You know, like, I almost cry sometimes when I think about it. Everyone started to love each other. And everyone started to serve each other. And I never saw anything like it, you know. It was like unbelievable. And people were hugging each other, and people were pouring water for each other, and people were helping old ladies, and old ladies were helping young people. And, you know, there was everyone in the plane. There was this feeling that I've never felt in my life. And the stewardess was the only one that freaked out, and everybody else was everybody else was hugging each other and saying, you know, which town are you from, you know, and how many kids you got, and they were hugging each other and helping each other and talking about what they're going to do if they survive and stuff. And it was weird. It was really, really weird. And this feeling, I've never felt it in my life. And, you know, and then we landed and the landing gear held, and there were hearses lined up on the runway and ambulances, and 20, 30 hearses. And it was just weird. And we got off the plane and everybody looked around, and then the feeling disappeared. You know, and everybody rushed to get their baggage, you know, and it was back to this thing, you know, and it was really weird. But just the feeling in the plane at that moment, that's lojo, okay? That's real lojo, okay? And if we have a good lojo in class, that's what we're headed. That's what you're trying to do in this class, okay? The homeworks aren't like, there's homeworks because I have to make up something, right? But it's not the point. This class, of all the classes, you've got to do it at work. Okay? And the goal of this class, Lojong, really means to try to develop that heart that I had on the plane. You know, it's try to develop that feeling in your heart about the people around you. Okay? Because we are in the plane, you know. Like, everybody around us is dying. I went back to work today after 6 months. Two people died, you know. And it was so sad, and people got a little bit of lojong, and then there were extra orders for JCPenney and disappeared again, you know. But we're all in the plane. There's no difference between this room and that plane at all, right? I mean, we don't know that we're not going to die tonight. Anyone in this room will die. Somebody will die. You know, when I was at work, no one would guess that the people that died. One was a big executive, healthy, you know, tall, strong, rich, powerful, you know. And the other one was this very, very sweet, gentle, religious lady running a big department. And you know, doesn't matter. They died, you know. And we're all in the same feeling. Everyone around you is suffering. Everyone around you is having a bad life, you know. And everyone around you is nervous and scared. And depressed at times. And we're all in the same airplane. And the airplane's going down. And everybody in this room is going to die. And you're going to lose everything you ever worked for. And you're going to lose any person you love in this life. All your family you will lose. You know, it's just a question of a few years, maybe. Or maybe sooner than that. So why not have that feeling about each other? What's the difference? You see what I mean? What's the difference between being in this room and being in the plane? There is no difference, but we just have trouble doing it. You know, Master Shantideva says, and they quoted in Lojong text, Jhon means you have to practice it. You see, you have to get used to that. You have to. It's called developing a good heart. Okay, developing the good heart. I don't like the translation mental training. You know, to me it sounds like IQ training or something like that. It's not that. You are seeking to get the feeling about other people that was going on in that airplane. And you're seeking to live like that all day long. And Jhon means you got to practice it and you have to develop it because it's not natural for us. You know, we're selfish. We worry about ourselves. We're worried about that we should get what we want. We're not thinking much about other people. We're struggling to make a living or to get ahead at work, or we're not really thinking about the other people around. And we're not really sensitive to the fact that everybody in this room is dying at the same rate, you know. And we're all in the same thing. You and me are going to lose every good thing we have, period. Everything. And still we struggle like children to get something. And it's useless. It's hopeless. You won't get anything. If you get it, you'll lose it, you know. And then you're struggling your whole life to get something that you're going to lose anyway. You know, how many... It's cool to watch children inherit stuff from their parents. The parents live to give stuff to the children. You know, I'm not happy, but at least my kids will be, you know. And they collect things like a house or money. And then, I don't know if you've ever watched it happen. It happens over and over again. Then the kids get the house and they get the money and they just blow it, you know. I did mine in... My mother died. She worked to pay for this house for 20 years, you know. Me and my brother spent the money in 6 months, you know. And that place was gone, you know. And all that 20 years of work was gone in 6 months, you know. And everything's going to be like that, you know. Don't kid yourself. You know, everything you try to collect or achieve or like that, it's over with. You know, there's nothing like that. You don't have anything to look forward to. All the people in this room who are depressed are right. You know? You know? And that's the way it is. That's the way it is. So why fight with each other? You see, that's the point. Why struggle with each other? What's the point of struggling with each other? We're all in the same boat. We're all going to die sadly. So what's the point of having any bad feelings between each other, you know, all day long? Why do we do it, you know? And we do it because, according to Buddhism, thousands of years of past history. You know, you can't stop it. The purpose of Jhon, the meaning of Jhon is to change your heart. And it's hard. It's very hard. But it's true, okay? Nothing I said tonight is like, I'm not trying to prove future lives or hell realms to you or hungry beings or hungry ghosts or something like that. You can't deny anything I said already. That's your condition. That's where we are. You know, you can't deny it. So why not enjoy things with each other? Why not be good to each other? But you have to practice. You have to get used to it. And that's what Jhon means, okay? Jhon. Okay. So low Jhon means developing the good heart. Okay? Developing a good heart. I'm going to give you a... I like in the class to pull out some Tibetan to back up what I say. Nothing in this class is done except by original sources, okay? And I'm going to give you a quotation from Chankya Rinpoche, okay? Say Chankya.
Chankya.
Rinpoche.
Rinpoche.
Chankya is a line of lamas. It's like the Dalai Lamas or the Panchen Lamas. And the Chankyas, this Chankya lived 1642 to 1714. He's famous because he was the teacher of the Emperor of China. So when you talk about politics between Tibet and China, really the old relationship between Tibet and China was very sweet and very beautiful. And oftentimes, great Tibetan lamas would go to the court of the Chinese emperor and actually become their lamas and their teachers. And there was this big thing that when they got there, the emperor had to sit down on the ground and the lama would sit up in the throne. Because this is the proper relationship between a lama and their student. Okay, and it used to be very sweet. It looks like this might happen again nowadays. I mean, there are indications from China that are very interesting. As China becomes more affluent and as they get over the hurdle of needing money and things like that, it seems like there's a big movement of lamas into China teaching, and there's a big interest in Tibetan Buddhism starting. And it's very beautiful to watch. It looks like that might be the way to free Tibet, you see. And anyway, I like Chagyur Rinpoche because he epitomized the proper relationship between the Chinese and the Tibetans, which was Buddhism, and both of them Buddhists. And there were Chinese teachers who came to Tibet, and they were honored, and Tibetans studied with them. And there was this beautiful love between the Tibetan and the Chinese Buddhists. And I think it should be like that. You know, that's my hope for Tibet. And I think it can happen in the next... You know, I spoke to some Americans working in West China yesterday, and they said this is happening. And there's factories cranking out Dharma books in Chinese, and there are brilliant young Chinese in the United States helping translate Tibetan books. And it looks nice. Looks very possible. I think it would just be one huge Buddhist country together. And looks very interesting. Anyway, Chagyur Rinpoche was the key in those days between the Chinese emperor and the Tibetan lamas. He's a former life of a lama named Pabongka Rinpoche. Okay? They used to ask Pabongka Rinpoche, "Are you Chagyur Rinpoche?" And he said, I do like those Chinese sedan chairs that they carry around. originally he was recognized as Chagyur Rinpoche, and they kept it quiet because there were some political problems in those days. And that was connected with the Chinese government. So they decided to announce that he was Pabongka Rinpoche, but he's not. He wasn't. He was Chagyur Rinpoche. And that's in his biography. And he says, "I'm not a big tuku, and I don't remember my past lives, but I sure do like China. And and I sure do like Chinese things. And every time I see a Chinese thing, I think of some other place where I used to live." And it looks like he was, you know, and he keeps denying it very gently. And his mother kept telling about all these dreams she had had when he was before he was born. So Chagyur Rinpoche says a very beautiful thing about Lojong, and I'm going to put it up here in Tibetan. And I like it because I think it shows you what the word Lojong means, what it really means, okay? I always wondered what mental training was. You know, I thought they would take me into a room and have a bunch of IQ tests and, you know, that if I worked hard, I would get smarter. I like the way he defines Lojong. This is kind of long. This is the longest thing you're going to get tonight, so appreciate it. You are not going to have major homework in this class. The major homework in this class is going to be done at work with that person you can't stand. Okay? All right? Okay. By the way, if you're new, don't worry about all the Tibetan. You don't have to do the Tibetan. That comes the second class you come to. No, but you can do it in either track. You can do it in English or Tibetan. It doesn't matter. You can answer your homeworks in English, and you're quite welcome to. Half the people in this room whose Tibetan is quite good said they would never learn Tibetan. Okay. And we have a couple of good Tibetan teachers here, and I remember the first night they came to class, and they had no clue they were going to learn Tibetan. Okay. And now they're quite good at it. There's this one nun who swore she'd never learn Tibetan. Now, every time you meet her, you say, "Does she delay?" And she gives you this long commentary on the meaning of each word, you know. And then she starts telling you other words that you don't want to know about. Okay, we'll go ahead. Those of you who are carving it can finish later. We are creating a CD-ROM with 2,000 books on it that we saved from Tibet. And a lot of people here, I mean, I counted up, there's like 30 people working on it. And this book, we came across this book. This is by the first Chankyur Rinpoche. This is by Pomon Rinpoche in his former life. And it's an explanation of a famous Lojong. Okay? The person who wrote that Lojong is called Dorje Senge. So this part right here. Okay? Say Dorje?
Dorje.
Senge.
Senge.
Dorje Senge.
Dorje Senge.
Dorje means diamond. Okay, Do means stone, and J means the king. And Doje or Dorje, it means the king of stones. In Sanskrit, it's Vajra. Okay, Vajra. And it means a diamond. If you've ever seen that thing they hold in their hands, which is called a Vajra, that little thunderbolt thing, okay, it's interesting that that's a perfect diamond crystal. You know, I'm a diamond maestro. And, you know, I studied these things for many years. And that's the natural shape of a perfect diamond crystal. It's called a twin crystal. And they come in octahedrons. So that double Dorje, or the two things coming off of a spoke, is the natural shape of a real diamond. And that's why a diamond on a playing card is like that, or a baseball diamond. That's the natural shape that they come in. And it has very, very profound meanings in Buddhism, and we're not going to go into it, okay? Those of you who studied the diamond cutter know about it. Senge is from the, it's a corruption of the Sanskrit Singha, and that means lion. Like there's a small town in Malaysia that was called the Village of the Lion, Singapore. And that's how that word. It comes from the word lion, okay? So Dorje Senge means diamond lion, lion of the diamond. And this is the name of the author of one of the most famous lojongs ever written, okay? This is the lojong in the 8 verses, okay? It's called Sikgyema, and that's right here. Sikgyema, okay? Without the ra, okay? So if somebody asks you, you know, what lojongs did you study? You'll say, oh, I started with Sikgyema. And they'll say, ooh, you know, who wrote it? And you'll say, Dorje Senge. Everybody knows that. Okay. What are his dates? 1054 to 1123. He was a Kadampa. Kadampas were the first Buddhist fanatics of Tibet. They met these wacky guys that came from another country. They studied this weird language that they were speaking. They worked real hard to learn it. They got really good at it. They started these little centers in their country where people would get together and practice this new stuff and learn it, and then they would try to get more teachers to come, and then slowly some of them would go to that other country and learn it, and they would come back and get better and better at it, and then they decided to translate all those books into their language. So first they got all the books they could and made a big collection of them, and then they started translating, and they made sure they trained a lot of people in that language, and pretty soon the little groups became little communities, and they called them monasteries, and it started to spread all over the whole country, and then sooner, pretty soon there were like 2 or 3 million monks and nuns, and everybody was practicing, and it's pretty amazing, okay? These were the Kadampas. They were the first generation Buddhists, okay? They were the kind of the weird ones that chose a new way, all right? And the Lojong was very popular among the Kadampas. The Kadampas generally started around 1000, okay? So you'll see most of the books we're studying, they come from 1000. These were specially designed as Buddhism moves into its new country, for the people to apply it right away at work. Okay? And those are the Kadampas, first Buddhists of the new country. Right? If they hadn't worked so hard, we wouldn't have any Buddhism. By the time Buddhism reached its peak in Tibet, they had written 200,000 books about Buddhism. Okay? That's the largest collection of religious books in the world, really. Okay? And high quality religious commentaries, and they had converted it completely to their own language and spread it throughout the country. Okay, and then slowly the original books disappeared. There are very few Sanskrit books left. The whole thing was transmitted and brought into the new country. Okay, and that's the way it has to go. So these are very famous early Buddhists. He has another name, Dorje Senge, which is Langri Tangba. And sometimes you see his name as Langri Tangpa. Okay. This guy, this means the guy from the plains of Langri. It means like Mr. Iowa or Kansas or something like that. Langri Tangpa just means the guy from Kansas or something like that. Okay, Langri Tang is a place. It's a plateau in Tibet. So Langri Tangpa means the guy from Langri Tang. Okay. By the way, he was a Semba Chenpo. Semba Chenpo. Semba Chenpo means great bodhisattva, high level bodhisattva. Technically speaking, a bodhisattva with a high realization of emptiness, with a high level of emptiness understanding. Okay, he was a Semba Chenpo. And he made Zepe. Okay? He made something we call, Dharma means we call in this case. Okay? Something we call, he made a book that we call the Tsigyama, okay? That's right here, Tsigyama. In fact, I think I misspelled it. This should be, okay? There should be an extra sa here, okay? Tsig means verses, okay? This whole book that you're going to study. The last book you studied was about 1,000 pages long. The last class was based on about 1,000 pages of material. The Lojong Tsigyama is 1 page long. I saw a bunch of satisfied smiles. Okay. Tsig means verse. Ge means eight. Okay? 8 verses. That's all there is. There's 8 little verses of poetry. And that's the whole Lojong. And that's the way it's going to be. So take heart. Those of you who survived the logic class, this is your karma. That... By being patient with that class, you've gained this class where your whole homework is like one thing, one page. Okay, Tsigye. Tsigye means 8 verses. Tsigye ma. Okay, ma. It's a tradition in Buddhism that books are named after women. Okay, it's like hurricanes used to be, or ships, and because a woman is considered the epitome of wisdom and of knowledge and of power, okay? The power of wisdom or the power of knowledge, okay? Thank you. And even the Heart Sutra, the real name of the Heart Sutra is Bhagavati Chomden De Ma, which means the woman Buddha, the woman conqueror, okay? And it's because the woman, the feminine, epitomizes wisdom and knowledge, okay? And so the Tsigye also has a feminine ending, Tsigye Ma. Okay? It means the book in 8 verses, all right? The book in 8 verses, okay? And that's the Lojong we're going to study. We'll spend today on it, and we'll spend next Tuesday on it, okay? The 8 verses. What's the purpose of those 8 verses? It's a Dhampa, okay? By the way, for those of you who don't know, this is the Dhampa in Kadampa. Okay, this is Dhampa. If you want to know how to spell it, there it is. Okay, Dhampa. Dhampa means religious advice or instruction. Okay, Dhampa means It's a special kind of religious book where your lama comes and he takes you up in the room and he sits you down and you're real quiet for half an hour and then he tells you some holy sweet thing. That's a dhampa. Okay? That's what dhampa means. Dhampa is not in a public class. Dhampa is not in a debate ground. Dhampa is not something you're memorizing. Dhampa is something whispered from this teacher to the student in a very sweet moment in the teacher's room somewhere, something like that, okay? And that's dhampa. The kadambas were called kadambas because once you get to a certain spiritual level, no matter where you are, dhampas keep happening to you. You know, the boss calls you in to yell at you, and all you get is this dhampa. It sounds like Milarepa trying to talk to you. You know, and it's a certain spiritual level called dhampa, okay? Very special, very sweet, okay? So this book, says Chankin Rinpoche, is a dhampa. Okay? These are like sweet little words. What do you call it? Sweet nothings that the diamond lion is whispering in our ear. Okay? And that's the meaning of dhampa. Okay? Dhampa. What are you supposed to do with this dhampa? Oh, you're supposed to jong. Okay? You're supposed to jong. This is the jong in lojong, okay? That's the jong. So you're supposed to develop something. You're supposed to grow something. And don't forget the other meaning of the word jong. You're supposed to make something pure, okay? You know, it's a trouble to try to translate the word lojong because you've got to get a word that means pure and means practice and means develop, okay? Very difficult. So jong means to try to work on something over and over and over again until you get it right. What? Try to go to work and get the airplane feeling, you know, all day long with those irritating people there, okay? I mean, nobody complained about the movie after they told us about the fuel and the landing gear, you know? Nobody was arguing for another dessert or something, you know? People forgot about food and everything. What's the point of eating if you're going to die in 20 minutes, you know? And life is like that. Your whole life is like that. To try to act like that all day long, to try to reach that behavior level all day long, that sweet feeling about other people all day long, it does not come naturally. You have to practice. You have to do it over and over. You have to go learn it, and then you have to try to do it at work. And that's jong. Jong means you're going to have to work your ass off about it, okay? It's nice to stand up here and describe this good feeling that I had in the airplane. It doesn't come back to me very often, especially on a bad day. People are screaming at me at my job, or someone's trying to screw me or something like that. And that's when you have to practice, okay? Because it does not come naturally to a human being. And jong means you got to practice, okay? You have to the word develop in developing a good heart, okay? Now I get to the good heart part. He does not call it lo, jong. He calls it sem jong. Okay? Sem. He does not call Diamond Lion's book lo jong. He says, this is not lo jong. This is sem jong. Okay? You want to know what lo jong means? It's a sem jong. Okay? What's the difference between lo and sem? In English, we just have the one word, mind. In Tibetan and Sanskrit, there are probably 15 words for mind. And they all have different meanings, you see. There's only one word in English for what we use in Tibetan. So sem and lo are the same thing. They mean mind, okay? A mind or a thought or a wish, okay? And that's called sem. So why does he go to the trouble to use a different word for lo if it means the same thing? Why doesn't he call Diamond Lion's book a lojong, which is what it is? Why is he calling it a semjong? Because it's a changju semjong. Okay? And that's the punchline for those of you who know Tibetan. Changchu means Buddhahood. Okay? Changchu means Buddhahood. Okay? He's trying to say something. The ultimate compassion, the goal of Buddhism, an extraordinary form of the airplane attitude, of that state of mind that we had in the airplane for half an hour, and then we lost it when we knew we weren't going to die. Seriously, That state of mind in Buddhism is called Changchu Gisem. Okay, Bodhicitta. Okay, Changchu Gisem, Bodhicitta. All right, and the word for chitta in Sanskrit, in Tibetan, is sem. Okay, so that attitude of feeling this sweet feeling for other people because you're all in the same boat and you're all going to die. So why are you fighting with each other? Who cares who gets the promotion? You know, who cares who gets more money? You know, who cares if it's hot in the room or cold in the room? We're all dying. You know, be good to each other. You know, be kind to each other. What else is there? What else do we have to do with each other? You're going to die and lose everything you fought for. So what's the point? You know, at least have a good time with each other. At least be sweet to each other. You know what I mean? And that's Changchu Gisem, really. That's, you know, think about each other and try to be sweet to each other. And that's Changchu Gisem. Good heart, okay? I translate a good heart. I feel that translating Lojong as developing a good heart is the whole point, okay? What are you trying to do? You're trying to jong, or practice, Changchu Gisem. The word lo is a code word for bodhicitta. Okay? You're trying to practice a good heart. And that's the whole feeling you get from the Lojong. When you study the Lojong now, when you study the first four verses, which we'll do after we take a break. We're going to take a break, okay? And we'll come back and we'll do Lojong. And you'll get the feeling. This is not IQ training. Okay? This is trying to develop some kind of feeling about other people where you love each other. And that's Changchu Gisem Jong is the meaning of Lojong. Okay? So I don't want to hear mental training running around much, okay? How about developing a good heart? All right? Because that's the meaning of the low here. And that's what Changyu Rinpoche said. Alright? Alright, we'll start the four verses after. Take like a 10-minute break. We have to finish by 9. We have to be good. And please don't bring any food or drink in here. Okay? You can drink it outside. Alright? Little explanation about those events. Sojong is a special ceremony of renewal and purification. And it's to purify yourself when you break one of your vows, either your freedom vows or your bodhisattva vows or your secret vows. And so it's a special ceremony. Once a year, we do a long sojong, a very long one. It's a custom during a sojong ritual that you cannot take a book with you. It has to be done from your memory. So Rinpoche has been letting us kind of squeak by in the last few years, and now he said he's cracking down, and he said he wants you to know. So it's a commitment to memorize them, but it's what you are putting in your books every day. Okay, it's only that. And the point is that if you memorize it, it'll be easier for you to live by it. So if you can do it, it's very good. All right. Last year he played chicken with us, and at the last minute he said, okay, you can come anyway. But I don't think he's going to do it this year, frankly, okay? I mean, if you want, you can try, but I don't think it's going to work. I believe that even if you haven't taken the initiation, you could possibly come for the bodhisattva part, but I'm not sure. So I'll confirm that with him, and I'll let you know next Tuesday. As far as teachings out of town, I never charge. And I always have these conflicts with centers where I go, and they want to charge. So to make it clear, we don't charge, and they're requiring some kind of registration fee. If you don't have any money, we'll just talk them out of it, okay? So, excuse me?
Yeah, just write a formal letter.
They have scholars. You know, they always break down at the end, so don't worry about it, you know. Send it in if you can, but if you can't, you're quite welcome to come, and, you know, I'll work it out with them, all right? We're about to study the first half of the 8 verses. And fine. Good.
Is that okay for people in the back?
I think that's as good as it's going to get, though. Yeah. This will be all right. Yeah. Just by coincidence, or I don't know. But Rinpoche has just come out with a new book. And it happens to be about the 8 verses. It came out, like, I don't know, a week ago. And after, you know, 10 years, and which is like, you know, 12 pages a year. So anyway, It's a very beautiful book on the eight verses. That's Diamond Lion there on the front. That's a real carving from the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras from Tibet of him. And his rosary is kind of big. I don't know. Anyway, it's a really beautiful commentary that Rinpoche gave. It's published by our own press, which is MSTP. Now, I talked to Art into giving me a couple boxes to bring here to sell, and then I got feeling bad about selling things because we don't like to sell things. And then some very bodhisattva student came up to me and paid for it all. So everybody should take one. Yeah. Who's not clapping? Who's not clapping? You gotta. No, anyway. Yeah, actually, we're still short a bit. So, you know, talk to the bookkeeper's friend, Anne. Can you raise your hand? She's there. She's there. And there's a box outside if you want to throw it in there. It all goes to the same ocean of expenses, you know. But feel free to take one, okay? It'll be, we'll try to put it at the door as you go out of class. It's a very beautiful commentary. Yeah.
How much is it?
Oh, technically it's $7, $6.95. But we do everything free, so it's free, okay? And if you want to help, that's fine, and if you can. Don't even think about it, okay? It really is free, and we don't want you stealing our virtue. Okay? All right. By the way, on the book you'll see Geshe Langri Tampa, and he was one of the first Geshes. Nowadays Geshe is a degree, but in those days it meant Kalyana Mitra, which is a spiritual friend, spiritual, you know, buddy. And that was the first use of the word Geshe was during those days. So he was a Geshe. Okay. Say Lojong. Gata. Lojong. Gata. Lojong means Lojong. Developing the good heart, okay? And Gyatso is a special kind of book in Tibet. It means a compendium or a collection of lojongs, okay? Gya means 100, Tsa means root text, and Gyatso is a kind of book in Tibet where you go get a bunch of lojongs and you put them in one book, okay? So if somebody says, what are you studying, you know, at ACI nowadays? You can say Lojong Gyatso. You know, Lojong Gyatso is a special collection of all the lojong texts that was put together by this brilliant guy about 600 years ago. And his name was? Say Muchen. Koincho. Gyantsen. Muchen. Koincho. Gyantsen. I had no idea what Muchen meant, so I went to see Gene Smith today, and he's this brilliant master. And he said Muchen's this little county in central Tibet, like Monmouth County. So Muchen means like Monmouth or something, okay? Koincho Gyantsen is his monk's name, okay? Koincho Gyantsen. We don't know his birth date. We don't know his death date. 14th century, okay? Sometime around 600 years ago. And he put together a beautiful collection of lojongs. And I wish we could read all of them together. We don't have time. I picked out about the best, well, best. I picked out some sweet ones, okay? You'll be studying about six different lojongs during this course, and some of them are just amazing. I'm going to go through the. This will be in your syllabus if you have the syllabus. Okay. We'll spend today and Tuesday on Diamond Lion, which is the eight verses, which is Rinpoche's book. Okay, that you're going to get tonight. The next one is by Yangumba, class 3. Yangumba is a Kagyu Lama, a very powerful Lama and very much respected and admired in our tradition, and we study his books on Lojo. Next one is Togme Sambo's 7 Points, Lojong in 7 Points. And this is a very special Lojong that's been studied over the centuries and forms a big part of the Lam Rim teachings. Okay, a lot of the Lam Rim teachings are designed off of the 7 points. Class 6 is going to be on the It's called Freedom from Four Attachments. And this is a very special lojong. To me, it's so special that on Friday night, for the next 6 weeks, we're going to study only that. Okay, so you're going to get one class on it here. But if you'd like to know more about it, you can come to the classes on Friday night. Okay, it's a beautiful text written by one of the most important Sakya masters of history called Drapa Gyaltsen. Drapa Gyaltsen is special, Jetsun Drapa Gyaltsen. He was not a monk. He was a layman, and he had layman's vows. He was like Art or something, okay? And very special lama, very great lama. Very important in our Vajrayogini lineage, okay? If you do that sadhana, he's in there. And very, very extraordinary lama in our tradition. Came from the Sakyas. And we borrowed him, okay? And he's fantastic. And we're going to be studying that one. Next one is called Crown of Knives, okay? Some people have translated it as Wheel of Sharp Weapons, which is a bad translation. It refers to a special, like a throne, sorry, a crown that has like razor blades flying inside of it and chopping up the person's head and things like that. It comes from a sutra called Kama Bibhanga. And if we have time, we'll look at the sutra a bit. But it's a very powerful lojong. Okay. Class 9 is also a Sakya lojong text, and it's about it's a very cool lojong about if things are going right, how you can turn it into spiritual practice. And if things are going wrong, how you can turn that into spiritual practice. So it doesn't really matter if things are going right or wrong. It's a way to turn everything into spiritual practice. Okay. That's by a teacher of the Sakya Pandita. Also in that class, we'll have an instructions on developing the good heart that came down through the master translator of Sumba. Sumba is a place in Tibet. Sumba Lhotawa is a famous translator from early Tibet. And I was trying to figure out for the syllabus, I'm in the car going to Connecticut, right, because Fran Perella kidnapped me. And I'm sitting there trying to finish the syllabus and I'm trying to figure out who wrote this book, because it says came down from Sumba Lhotawa. And I'm like studying the lojong, and it doesn't, usually they don't tell you anything, who wrote it, where it came from. You know, I'm studying, reading, and then finally you get to this part. He's a translator. He went to India to learn Sanskrit. It would be like somebody going to Sarah to learn Tibetan, okay? And he's brought all this gold with him, because in the old days you had to pay for class. No. it was a custom to raise as much gold as you could carry and offer to that lama. And sometimes they would just throw it in the wind. It was gold powder. And sometimes they'd just take it and go like that. But the point was that you had to sacrifice something for the class, you know? And it would be, I mean, there are cases where it was your weight in gold or something. And they would just take it and throw it into the wind or something. You know, they didn't care about the money. It's a commitment from the student, you know what I mean? And he had all this gold, and he spent it all, and he learned everything, and he studied for years in India, and then he's about to go home to Tibet, and he goes to Bodh Gaya to pay tribute to the stupa one more time. And he's sitting there, and these two women start talking, right? We know about them. We already talked about it. And he's listening, and it's just these two women, you know, walking around the stupa, and they're talking about death, and they're talking about not having to die. And he's like listening, you know, and he's like just taking a break, sitting near the stupa, and he's like, suddenly he realizes that these are some kind of special beings that are teaching him something. You know, these are not just two people who just showed up, you know. And then he realizes, suddenly he understands every teaching he ever got in India, and now he's ready to go home, you know, from these two ladies walking around the stupa, you know. And that's the lojong we're going to study, is what he heard. So that's why they don't say it written by Sumbalot, they say passed down to Sumbalotawa, and that's the cool thing. Okay, in class 10 we'll do a. I like this one, instructions given by Sarlingba to Lord. Sarlingba was a famous lama in Indonesia, and he had a famous student called Atisha, Lord Atisha, and when Atisha was going back to India, I guess, on this dangerous boat trip in 1100 or something, and And Sarlingba says, look, you're going to Tibet. I better give you some instructions on teaching weird students in foreign countries who are so difficult to discipline and to train them and to tame their minds. I better give you some special instructions. So I thought that was sort of apropos to... So we're going to study that, Lojo. I like the last one. Adi Shah was just hanging around one night, and these two angels appeared to him and told him, you better study Lojo. We're going to give you some advice about Lojo. And that's a special Lojo. I really like that one. And that passed down by Lord Adi Shah about 1,000 years ago. Okay, so this gives you a flavor of the Lojos we're going to do. Okay, and those all come from the Lojo Gyatso of Muchen Kwentu Kyentun. All right? I'd like to start the Tsigema, okay, the eight verses. It's very good to memorize it. When I first studied with Rinpoche, he made me memorize it, you know, and it's only like eight verses. It takes 30 seconds to recite it. It's not like 17 pages or anything. And it goes, the first verse goes, Dagny Senjin Tanjila, Yishin Nobule Habe, Duncho Dube Sambaye, Dartu Cheba Zimbarsho. And if you have time, memorize it. It's very simple. It's not very difficult. But I'm just going to go through it with you, and I'm going to finish on time. We've been told by the Quaker House that we are not invited back again after this course. Okay? We've abused their rules. I broke a lot of them. The logic class went till, 10 o'clock, 10:30. And it doesn't look like they will let us come back again after this course. So if anybody knows a good place where they don't mind if we abuse them, let us know, because we'll need it for the next course. But in the meantime, I think it's sort of embarrassing as a Buddhist group that we left such a bad taste in their mouth. So I'd really like you to please try to keep the... I'll try to be here on time and leave on time. And you guys try to not to eat things or drink things in the class or things like that. Try to be nice. Don't leave junk here when you leave. Very important, okay? You can't get to Buddha paradise if you leave junk at the Quaker house, okay? That's what it's called, Shinjong, okay? Getting your own Buddha field requires that you don't mess up other people's property, okay? Seriously. So be nice to them, okay? Be nice to the janitor, right? Okay. Dennis. Dagni Semjin Tamji La Yishin Nobula. Dagni means me. Semjin Tamji La means to all sentient beings. Yishin Nobu, by the way, you have the text there, so I'm not writing it, means a wishing jewel. By the way, in Sanskrit, this is Chintamani. It sounds like the Chitta in Bodhicitta. It's the same thing. Whatever you can think of, you can have. Okay? And there's a story in Tibet. There's this special jewel. And there's a commentary on this by Chikawa. He was a famous Kadampa. And he looked for Dorje Tsenge. He went walking around Tibet looking for Diamond Lion to get this teaching because he heard about it. And he missed him. He passed. He was too late. And he only learned it from one of his students. But he went ahead to write a beautiful commentary on it. He says, you see, there's this thing in Tibet called Yishin Norbu. By the way, sometimes the Dalai Lama is called Yishin Norbu. Like, Tibetans don't call the Dalai Lama Dalai Lama. The Tibetans call him Gyalwa Rinpoche or Yishin Norbu. And Yishin Norbu means wish-giving gem. And the idea is like an Aladdin's lamp, you know? Like you rub it and you get anything you want. And in Buddhist scriptures, there's this special jewel that is found in muck. You know, you have to go to some muck somewhere. Like, I don't know, lots in New York, right? And you have to dig around in the muck, you know? And then you find this it's kind of a rough jewel. And then there's this whole ritual you have to do. You have to put it on a high, it's called a tok. A tok means the ball on a flagpole. What do you call it? I don't know. The ball at the top of a flagpole, you know? Like you have to find this special pole and you have to put the jewel up there and you have to wrap it in special silks. You have to wash it with all these special potions and then you put it up there and then you do these prayers, you do these rituals, you know? And if everything comes out right, then you can wish for anything you want and you'll get it. It's like it's called a Yishin Norbu. And the Dalai Lama's name is Yishin Norbu. You know, so it gives you anything you can wish for. Okay? This text is saying, this line says, Other people are better than a Chintamani. Okay? Other people are better than a Yishin Noble. The people around you are more, Lanthak Ba means more precious than a wish-giving jewel. Okay? So, you know, like imagine this little thing here, this pen, right? The famous chewable object. You know, imagine that it was like some like wishing jewel. And you could take it in your hand like a penny or something, and you could wish anything you want, and you would get it. You know? So how could anything be more precious than that? You know, I'll debate you, you know. You know, how could anything be better than that? I mean, you could just get it and wish that everybody got enlightened, right? And then be over with. You know. So what's better? Why does he say they're better than a wish-giving jewel?
Potential for liberation.
See?
Huh? Lose a jewel.
He says you could lose a jewel. I don't know. Well, it's interesting. No, you know, by the way, if you know Tibetan, study this verse. Okay? Study the grammar. And study the translations you see of it. And if you look at it carefully, there's three different ways to read it. Diamond Lion is playing with us. He's having a good time. He's thinking, oh, about 900 years from now, they're going to have to translate it to English. I'm going to put three different meanings in it that are different. And they'll never be able to do it. He's probably giggling right now. You know, the first meaning of that is, you can't conceive of how nice it's going to be when you get to your tantric enlightenment. You can't even imagine right now. You know, if I told you, if I stood up here and tried to explain what it would be like, you wouldn't understand it. You wouldn't be able to think of it. Okay? You wouldn't get it. You know? That's, by the way, why Tantra is secret. It's a self-protecting secret. I mean, you can open up those books. They're around. You can study Tibetan. You can try to read them. You won't get it. You just won't get it. You can't conceive of what it's like to move into a tantric enlightenment. You can't even imagine it. You can't think of what it would be like. You can't imagine the process, and you can't imagine the steps in the process until it starts happening. And in that sense, other people are better than a wish-giving gem, because a wish-giving gem, you and I could not even make the right wish. You see what I mean? We couldn't think of the right thing to wish for because it's so foreign to us. What it would really be like in this lifetime to have this world turn into a tantric paradise is beyond, you cannot imagine. You can't imagine the result, and you can't imagine the events that would happen to you before that. You can't. You know, you can practice Buddhism and find out. But right now, you can't even imagine what the steps would be like, much less the final goal. Okay? So in that sense, anything that could bring you to tantric enlightenment in this life would be better than a wish-giving gem. Okay? Anything that could get you there to that kind of enlightenment before you die would be better than some wish-giving jewel that you could find. Okay? Better. Okay? So what is this holy method? You know, what is this amazing, powerful thing that's more powerful than that kind of jewel? He says, Semjen Tamje. Okay? Other people. Okay? That's like some kind of, what he's saying is that you want to get to some extraordinary tantric angel's body of light and omniscient state of mind filled with ultimate compassion all day long, and you want to become like that? The only way you can do it is by relating to other people. Okay? You ain't going to get there unless you learn to do the right thing with other people. And those are the people at work. And those are the people in your family. And that's your husband or your wife. Okay? And that's what the book says. And that's, the first two lines are like that. He hits you on the head right away. You know, he says, you want to, your ticket to tantric paradise is none other than the people around you all day long. Okay? It's not some special bell. It's not like this amazing crown. It's not like this dorje and all this, you know, weird rituals and stuff like that. You want to know what's going to get you to tantric paradise? Hey, got news for you. It's the people right around you in your office. And that's what the first two lines say. You know, you, they are for you your ticket to deathlessness in this lifetime are the people right around you at any given moment of the day. And you have to figure out why. It's like a koan, you know? Like, some people I could see that, but not my boss, you know what I mean? Like, can't be him, you know? And suddenly, and you have to figure it out. It's true, okay? The first two lines are true. If you want to get to a state of deathless bliss in this lifetime, you're going to have to do it with the people right around you. By doing the right thing with them, it will get you there. So do they become valuable for you or not? Yeah. I mean, if you did not have people like that around you, you would not get to deathless bliss in this lifetime. Impossible. That's the point. That's very radical change in the way you look at people around you. Okay? Very radical. And he's not exaggerating, and he's not being symbolic. This is not metaphorical. He's being literal. Okay? The only way that you will ever change into this incredibly beautiful body of light and this extraordinary mind forever is with the people around you. You need them. You need them to do that. You'll never do it without them. And so you better appreciate them. You know, these are the people who are going to make you enlightened. And you have to look at them that way as very, very precious. They're going to get me to heaven. Dr. Chipa Zimbershaw, I love you. Thank you. You know, abuse me some more. You know, okay? All right? Test me. Burn me. You know, check me. Push me. Make me be kind. Make me learn to be kind. You know, and this is the great thing they can teach you. This is what they're giving you. You cannot get it anywhere else. Go to a monastery. You know, I lived 8 years with Ken Rinpoche. I did not go anywhere. I went one Thanksgiving night, I went to Dieter's house for turkey. It was a big trip. My mother died, my brother died. My other two brothers got married. I didn't go. I just lived with him. And then I went to work, and I learned a lot more at work. Okay? You need those people. You need those people to be a real Buddhist. You know, to really understand Buddhism, you need good old New York irritating office workers all around you, you know. And that's the lesson of the Lojong, and the first verse is saying that, okay? The first verse is saying that, yeah.
Well, if that's true, why are somebody not in a monastery?
Actually, you go to a monastery because you need protection, because you're not strong enough to be out in the world. How's that? But that's a long story. It's also very important to contemplation. And meditation is also necessary for development, and you need a quiet place to do that. You need a good place to do that. Now, Sarah Monastery is about the least quiet place in the world. But that's another story. It's just a place to concentrate on your practice. But trust me, there's lots of events at Sarah Monastery that test you just as well as at American office. Okay? And if you don't think so, come with me in September, and you'll see. You know? Of course, they have personality conflicts as much as we do. Why do you go to a monastery? To fix yourself. You know, who goes to a monastery? People who need fixing. So are they sweet and holy and wonderful to each other? No. Not all the time. Are they learning? For sure. Are there great bodhisattvas there? Oh, yes. But don't forget, you know, when you look at me and my brothers and sisters with the robes, we're here because we're defective. And we're trying to fix ourselves, you know what I mean? Really. Okay, that's a different thing. Anyway. That's the first verse. Second verse. So it means that if you're a good Buddhist, you better figure out that your Buddhism is going to take place at your office and in your family. And you will not meet all sentient beings. They are the people at your office. Okay? There's all these Buddhists who do all these prayers for all sentient beings, and then they abuse the people in their office and stuff, you know? They are all sentient beings for you. You can't meet all sentient beings at once. It's too many. These are representing all living beings, okay? And if you study the Tibetan grammar, those of you who are doing the Tibetan track, You can read this grammar to say that the state of mind that wants to reach the highest goal is more precious than a wish-giving gem. You see what I mean? Meaning number two. Bodhicitta is better than a wish-giving gem. If you read it as Senjen Tamji La Yishin Nobulaha Be Chok Dupa. Okay? For those of you who are studying Tibetan, okay? You can read this line as saying that ultimate compassion is better than a wish-giving gem. So far you have two betters than wish-giving gem. All the people around you, and also compassion itself. And finally, if your Tibetan is really good, you can read it as Senchen Tamji La Yishin Nobulaha Dern Chok, which means that Buddhahood is better than a wish-giving gem. Okay? And you can read it all three ways. It's very cool. Okay? And if you translate it, you have to decide which one. Or maybe you put a footnote, I guess. Anyway, Buddhahood itself is better than a wish-giving gem also. Okay? And those are the three meanings of it. Next verse is Kamdusuna Dobitse Danikuni Mentashin Shinla Sampatapai Taktu Chepantimasho means wherever I am, whoever I'm with, may I see myself as lowest of all. Okay? And may I see other people as the best. Okay? This is not an exercise in low self-esteem. Okay? And I never want you to take it that way. That's not the point. Okay? There's a difference between thinking, oh, I'm the worst person in this room. I'm the stupidest. I have the least compassion. I'm the most selfish. I got the most debt on my credit card, everything. You know, I mean, that's not what the verse is saying. It's saying like this. And this is very holy. Okay? How many beings in this room are enlightened beings in disguise? Please raise your hand. Ah, you never do you? You're always lying. You know, I mean, whatever. Anyway. No, I mean, we don't know, okay? You really don't know. I'm not, okay? But you don't know how many beings in this room. There are, okay? According to the scriptures, there should be a few sprinkled in, okay? At least. Okay, according to the scriptures, there should be a few enlightened beings in this room disguised as normal people. And we don't know which ones. We really don't know which ones. Millions upon millions of beings have already become enlightened. They can plan events millions of years ahead of time. You know, they could plan to be here 3 or 4 million years ago with no problem at all. It's no big deal for them. Okay? The guy that's sitting next to you on the subway could have been sitting there for 10 years waiting for you. Okay? Now, I'm not kidding. Okay? I'm really not kidding. You don't know around you which people are that and which aren't. You will never know until you get close to being a Buddha yourself. Okay? You really won't know until you get pretty close. Okay? Then you'll see. It's like City of Angels. It's a good movie if you ever... Okay? It's good karma that these movies are coming out. I think the classes have been good. But you really don't know. What is their intentions towards you? You know, are they spying on you? You know? What do they want out of you, you know? Why are they masquerading? You know, why do they go through the trouble? Why don't they just hang out in their Buddha paradise? By the way, they do, and they're just doing this on the sideline. What do they want? Why won't they stay in their own realm? You know? What are they after? It's really crowded, this realm, you know? They're eating and drinking and everything. It's like the point of this verse is a reverse version of, what do they call that? Persecution complex or something? Okay? This is, I don't know what you want to call it, you tell me. It's the opposite of a persecution complex. It's to think that everyone is out to help you.
Pro-noise.
It's that the point of this verse is, look, among the people that you relate with every day, trust me, a certain number of them are enlightened beings, and they are out to force you to get enlightened. You know, they are pushing you, they are wheedling you, everything they say to you has special meaning. They're trying to set you up for that big enlightenment thought. You know what I mean? They're trying to set you up for that. And they're working on you all the time. All around you, there are spies from the enlightened realm who are working very hard to get you there. Okay? And that's what this verse means. It doesn't mean you have to go around feeling like a schmuck all day. Okay? It doesn't mean that. It means you look around you. Do you really know what the other people are thinking? Do you really know whether they're enlightened or not? Can you say who is and who's not? You know. So engage in some nice, pleasant paranoia and believe in them and try to listen and try to be sensitive to somebody saying something to you. Why are they saying that? Why are they doing that to me? Even the people who are bad to you, and especially the people who are bad to you. What are they trying to get out of me? What do they want? You know, if this is an enlightened being, why are they doing this to me? Okay? And they're trying to do something. They're trying to get you somewhere and try to figure it out. Okay? That's verse number 2. Number 3. Where's that go? What's number 3? Chulam kundu rangyula tokchen yomo kemata dakshen marung chepena tentav done dopasho. This is a special lojong that says, listen, once in a while you're going to get upset or you're going to have a bad thought in your mind, okay? Once in a while you're going to get angry at other people or irritated at other people, okay? At what point should you do something? And the text says, right away. Okay, the minute you start to feel bad, stop it. Okay? There's this thing in Western psychology, you know, oh, express your anger. You know, don't bottle it up. You'll just get an ulcer. You know, go ahead and yell. Take the person out and tell them what you're really thinking, you know. And let it out, you know. Buddhism says the opposite, okay? And I'm quite blunt about it. And the minute you start to feel bad towards someone, stop it, okay? Before it gets bigger, stop it. Face it and admit that it's your problem, okay? They are dying just like you. They want help just like you. They are sad just like you. They've had death in their family. They've had their body hurts just like yours. Come on, cut them some slack. Okay? Stop it right there. The minute you start to think something negative about somebody, stop it. Okay? Why? In Buddhism, one moment of a negative thought towards another person, even slight irritation on the street at someone who jostles you, is tremendous bad karma, and it builds. You see, one moment of slight irritation at someone has profound effects on your future life. Meaning, 10 years from now, your life won't be as happy. Small things will be going wrong. Why? Buddhism says because you got slightly irritated at a person on the street 10 years ago. Okay? Believe it or not. Okay? And if you want to study the reasons, you have to study karma. You have to study how karma works. Basically, karma is an impression put into your mind, and it grows much more powerful with every passing day. And it's not unreasonable in Buddhism to say that if you're slightly irritated at someone on the street, that you yourself will suffer greatly in 10 years from that. Okay? A few moments of irritation, okay, are enough to make very powerful effects on your mind. You have to study karma to know why. Karma is stored in your mental stream and it has that effect. One sec, okay? I gotta finish in like 4 minutes. Okay. That's the main thing. I'm gonna do one more verse and then we gotta clear out by 9:30, right? But as you run out the door, don't forget your book, okay? Rangsheng yembe simchen ni digdu dhapa nintong tse rinchen tero chepeshin nyepakawe chenzin shok. This is basically saying, look, bad people are hard to find, so try to get the most out of it. Okay? And then I was in the car going to Connect. I'm like ripping through the commentary trying to find out why bad people are hard to find. You know? And, you know, by the way, those of you who studied Master Shantideva, you know. What did he say? Why are they that hard to find? Yeah, if you stop reacting negatively to other people, bad people will get less in your life. Master Shantideva said, go and kiss them goodbye. You know? Once you learn the secret of Buddhism, which is to stop reacting to them in a bad way and start reacting to them in a nice way, you stop the karma of meeting them again. And then you'll be saying, it's weird, you know, everybody at work is getting nice. I don't know what's going on, you know. And you will honestly, I mean, you don't have to you don't have to struggle with the people at work. The best way to get rid of those people you don't like is to be good to them. According to Buddhism, this is the secret method of terminating fellow employees that you don't like, okay? Seriously, very serious. And they'll just change, you know. Whatever person's giving you a problem at work, be sweet to them. Realize that you have caused them, and you can change it, okay? And that's the other lojong. That's the fourth lojong, okay? These are special lojongs. The homework is pretty much to sit there and meditate about this all day. And you go through one verse each time. Pick a verse this week, okay? You've got 7 days. Don't do four, do one, okay? Pick one of these four verses and try to do it at work, okay? And that's your main homework, okay? All right. I'll answer just, you know, catch me next week with that question, okay? Try to remember. Yeah? Okay. Could be, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What if they make you really angry and they make you react in a really negative way? What about all that
bad? Friends basically saying, what if you meet someone who makes you angry and it doesn't work? They're not helping you, just get mad, okay? Those are not angels, okay? Those are bad people. That's your creative. No, never mind. Okay, we'll do a short prayer.
This is the end of Class 1. You have been listening to Lojong, Developing the Good Heart with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.